Everybody, this is Matthew Aaron, www.matthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. Please follow us on Twitter. I had to create a new account. I did not know that after 30 days, it kind of goes kaput. If you put it on hold, then I was just tired of all the venom on Twitter, and now I don't have any followers, and I don't have an account. But at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, the Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, you can follow us there. We still do have thousands of followers over there, so thank you. And thank you to everyone that's followed us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and now we're at Anchor.fm. We're doing really great over there. I'm really happy you guys all followed us there. Our other distributor just wasn't doing it for me. Today, I'm going to talk to a good friend of mine. He did Landline with us. Hopefully, he's about to do this wrestling movie I just wrote. I don't know how much I could talk about or not talk about the film, but I wrote Jay a part in it, so I have this movie. I'm hoping Jay and I get to work together soon. Jay Washington, great stand-up comic, also in Chi-Raq, Spike Lee's film. Spike gave you a big moment there. Jay, how you doing, man?
All things considered, bro, I mean, I guess I'm okay. Things considered, you know, it's one of those, like, I mean,
I don't know what other thing to have asked you out of the gate.
I mean, I think that's the thing, though. That's the only thing, because we're so used to asking people when we talk to them and introduce, like, hey, how you doing? And it's like, well, I'm a black dude.
Yeah, just when you think it's been worse asking you about COVID, like, how's your day going? I'm sitting in my fucking house. How do you think my day is going?
I had to worry about was COVID-19.
Right. Now it's how you doing during everything that's going on right now in this country, which is just it's a fucking show, man, that's for sure. There is protests happening everywhere, thank God for that, but then there's other people that are not looking at the positive of the situation, that's for sure. How's things in LA?
LA is crazy. LA is its own monster, especially with everything with the stay-at-home orders and the level of protest and how they started to, you know, one of the first places to enact a curfew, and how the pushback behind that has been, and still with the peaceful protests and the videos coming out showing the escalation that's been happening of the protests that haven't been from protesters, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been, it's been a strange vibe, because for me, and I'll be honest, you see so many people trying to get on the equality for all and Black Lives Matter, and we got to change this boat right now in the bandwagon. You see that, and it's a great thing right now, right?
Yeah.
I am skeptical of it, in a sense, because this is going to sound, we've seen it before. This can sound good for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then things change right back around. And so, you know, people are like, oh, LA's this big liberal bubble. I'm like, stop. I need y'all to stop thinking that. I need you to stop thinking that. So, I mean, overall, though, I'm positive. I've been very outspoken with everything going on over the past several days. I've been able to try to hold my own, hold steady, and keep myself calm and, you know, sane, for the lack of better words.
Well, I look at it as like best case, worst case scenario. And I think best case scenario, a lot of these people are genuine in their solidarity with you guys. It's not all just for show. It's not all just a black screen on their Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's not all influencers looking to film a video that they're protesting, because it is kind of now become the cool thing. On day 5, day 6, it's less violent. It's more, you know, mainstream, and it's kind of become a little cooler to go protest now.
Yeah.
For me, I hope that most of these people are genuine. However, and that there's a lot of criminal justice reform coming our way. Worst case scenario, and I hope this isn't the case, but just like when I protested for Prop 8 in LA and we got gay marriage passed literally days later, hopefully there's at least some big steps made through law. And that it's just something we're just going to have to keep working at. But Joe Biden, I think, was right when Joe said, look, this isn't going to get done in my lifetime or probably even in your lifetime. We have to keep working and working and working. You can't turn the clock back on 300 years overnight. You should be able to, but the way this country is and how many people have so much hate in their hearts, or that you have to convince people to turn things back.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you have a country such as America, you know, people will be like, well, if you don't like it here, leave. It's not that simple. The country that is rooted in hate and racism, it's founded. It's its foundation. It's its core. It's at its core. And until it's like working out when you're trying to lose weight, one of the things you have to work out more, most importantly, to get in shape is your core. You have to work on your foundation. You have to, you know, get that thing that makes you from the beginning. And the fact that people don't really want to work on the core part of it, they don't want to focus on that. They want to go on the outer layers. They want to go on things that look cute and pretty behind it and don't want to do the necessary work. So yeah, of course, this is going to be a very long standing process. You still have states that are openly like, yep, we're racist. Mm-hmm. You know, yep, we don't like gays. We don't like blacks. We don't like Mexicans, all that. You got those. And people are like, well, that's people try. We still do this whole, well, that's just how they are, and write them off. And the problem is when you just try to write them off and push to the side, they don't go anywhere.
Right.
They're still there.
And they procreate. There's more of them in the future. Like there's not less of them. They procreate and they teach their children to be bigots as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what happens. I've seen it personally. I have extended family that lives in, if they listen to this, they're going to hate me, but they live in Indiana. They live in Joliet. They live in, you know, not as urban of areas. And the stuff you hear out of their mouths, and they will swear up and down they're not racist and bigots, is the most bigoted shit you're ever going to hear.
Ever.
And so that's kind of what's been blowing my mind. And I talked to you about this off the air, but what I think what blows my mind first and foremost is that we even have to have a conversation about this. Why should I have to convince someone not to be a bigot? Like, how is this such, like, I've seen white people do this. They're like, I'm sure you've seen this on social media where they're like, well, at least some people are learning from this. Learning from this? What?
First of all, to say that is like we're excusing the years of their lives, because most mm-hmm. of these people we're saying that about are fully grown adults, that we're excusing this abhorrent behavior. And we're just like, oh, well, you know what? What they did in the past, we can try to make them a new person now. Like, and it's just only now. Like, yo, this isn't, like you just said, this isn't in a one lifetime thing. You shouldn't have to teach people No. how to not hate people for just the color of their skin. You shouldn't have to teach people to not view people as a threat because of the color of their skin, to look down upon them because at one point in time, maybe not your direct ancestors, but people with the skin color and the lineage of yours decided that they were worth less than a human and enslaved them and even put on the books that they were 3/5 of a human and their life is less valuable than a dog's. You know, these things, this should never have happened in the first place.
Yeah. And the fact that you have to teach people about oppression, period, is kind of like, that blows my mind too. It's like, wait, what? Like, I've literally talked to someone who, and to their credit, they now get it. But like that they didn't get this before I talked to them blew my mind, which is our race of people, because at some point in time throughout history, we decided we weren't the human race anymore and that we were white and that we were black and that we were Mexican. And we put all these labels on things, and except of the fact that we're just all human. Our race of people are at the top of the mountain. And black people started 3/5 from the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
When you're at the top of the mountain and they're 3/5, that's oppression. And it's our duty to now be like, oh, that's bullshit, and help you guys get to the top of the mountain. Grab a hand, bring them up. And that people aren't understanding this concept.
Well, the problem when you bring that up is people are like, oh, why are they looking for a handout? Why can't they just pull themselves by their proverbial bootstraps? And it's like, you don't get it. We're not running the same race, like you just said. I'm already running a race where I'm way behind you off jump, trying to get to the same place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like playing a guy in basketball and I have 2 feet and we put a ball and chain on someone's ankle. Like, it's like someone is at a disadvantage. And when you have them at a disadvantage, it's like, dude, you gotta, it drives me crazy that people haven't gotten this. And here we are. And now people are learning, and I guess that's a good thing. But like, it does make you question the genuineness of everybody,
It's that they don't want to learn.
Yeah.
They don't want to know. Some people are choosing to remain oblivious about a lot of things.
It's not their problem, is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I hear this a lot. You know, I have those non-quote, and I'll put air quotes here, we're on radio so people can't see air quotes, non-racist, non-bigoted friends that are like, oh no, I have all these black friends and you know, I love them and everything. But, it's like, okay, here's a great analogy for the situation. It's like whenever anyone talks about all the gang violence on the south side of Chicago and all the gun violence on the south side of Chicago, and what do people always say? Oh, that's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their problem. That's the south side of Chicago's problem. And they kind of just say, that's it. That's it. That's the answer. It's the south side of Chicago's problem. And that's kind of what's going on here, where it's like, well, that's black people's problem. That's a black American problem. That's not my problem. And that's a big problem.
I hate that, because again, like with the issues that are currently going on, we're talking about, we want the end to police brutality of unarmed black men and women, and people try to justify it, and whether they realize it or not, when they go, well, the police kill unarmed white people too. Yeah, you know why? Because white people are over 60% of the population. So of course there are going to be a lot of incidents with those. But also, you're not seeing them being brutalized and murdered on video consistently. Secondly, when people go, well, what about black on black crime? You have to hit them and remind them, that's not a thing. Black on black crime is not a thing. You know why? Because you don't say white on white crime. You don't say Hispanic on Hispanic crime. It's just crime.
Crime.
The reason black people are more than likely to kill black people, because you're just in general liable to you're more than likely to kill people within your immediate proximity. It's just the way it is.
Right.
Unfortunately. Albeit all terrible. Don't get me wrong. Cause you know, some people are like, so are you saying it's not bad? No, it's all terrible. But it's what people keep trying to use to justify things.
Yeah, and people have to remember too, and I'm sure you can talk about this way more clearly than I can. But there's also, when they talk about like, well, the black people with the gun violence on the South Side, that's because of history has put them in that position. Mm-hmm. That is why those things happen on the South Side. It's not because they're black, but at the same time, it's also because of how they've been treated throughout history. That is how they survive on the South Side. That's why gangs were created, because they weren't getting opportunities to make money and they weren't getting opportunities to have education. And so they had to form their own way to do these things. And people chalk it up to that's them being black, and that has been something we've heard in Chicago for ever.
Well, also people forget why gangs were actually started. Gangs were actually started as protectors of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't ever, gangs were not always these criminal organizations as we know them are to be now. They didn't have this, you know, this foundation of a criminal element. They were meant to protect the neighborhoods from, you know, situations with white supremacists and racists and things like that. They were meant to do that. And then they've evolved into what they've become. But yeah, the violence of that, of gang violence, is just like any type of faction war. You have companies who beef. It's just that these beefs end up, unfortunately, with lives lost.
Yeah.
And it is a product of it. It's a product of the environment.
I think, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. I think it's very important to like take the myth off of a lot of these things that people believe, and like, hopefully, and I'm pretty sure I have a decent amount of white listeners. You like, please listen to this and just realize like these cliched stereotypes you have in your mind are wrong. They're not what you think they are. You need to think through, and you need to talk and listen to people about the situation. What I do want to talk and listen to you about is, what can we do? You're a stand-up comic, you're an actor. I act, I direct, I write. What can we do as creators, as artists, in the future to help out?
Well, the first and foremost thing is to listen. Listen and be willing to intake what you hear. A lot of people say they want to listen to people, but they don't listen. They just sit there and just act as if they are. And when it comes to creatives, open up your spaces. Yeah. Now, being a director, yeah, that's one. That's the helm of the project. But this is not saying you. Hire black writers, cinematographers, first ADs, people who are not just because they're black, but because they're qualified.
Mm-hmm.
There's many, we've been talking about, I've been talking to many people who are showrunners and who are writers are like, yo, put more black people in your writer's room and not have the black person be the one you hire when you're at the last part of your budget.
Yeah.
You can open those things up. Creatives, again, black people, there's been this meme and I've even spread it. Love black people like you love black culture. Black culture is has predicated and permeated everything throughout society. And so these people who are well-versed in it can help give you that voice for things you need, especially when it comes, again, creatives, when it comes to the technical aspect, people to be your board ops, people to be your cinema photographers for news outlets and whatever, your reporters on screen. You know, I do a lot of hosting for a lot of internet things, and especially panels for Comic-Cons. People who can do those things and are well qualified, not just because they're black, but because they've shown they can do it. And I think that's the biggest thing with creatives, to say, you know, you want to say you're about diversity. You want to say you're about these opportunities. You want to say you want to make things, the right things happen. Well, keep them going. Actually do the right thing. Don't just say it's a good thing to say for the moment because it's a hot button issue and then you go back on it. Creatives just have to, you know, they have to be able to say, look, we can make a change on things and do it.
Something I would love as a white creator, and I hope a lot of my fellow white or even Hispanic, any kind of race, any kind of creator says to you is, Jay, I would love to be involved more with you and with you, with other black Americans or either black people, period. Mm-hmm. So I'd love the opportunity for you to introduce us to more, like, let's commingle more our communities, our network. And I think that will also help, because I know for me, it's like, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I went to DePaul University. I went to Catholic fucking high school. I didn't have a lot of black experience in my life until right after college. And that's when the person that gave me my start in this business was a black man. And I worked for black people for many years. And that was like a crash course for me. It was like from zero to black and like 24 years old. So what I would love more of is to be more involved with you guys. And I would love to help out more, and I'd love to write more for you guys and hire more creatives that are black. And I would love that opportunity. So I hope when I come out to LA this summer, you and I spend more time together, and you can genuinely, you and I can work together to kind of bring some people together.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You'd be surprised. People want to think that sometimes that there aren't black people willing to work with or, you know, to collaborate with people. And that's never the case. Like, yo, we'll say we're willing to do, we want to do our community first because our community needs to be uplifted. That's just a given. That's a given. But if we know, hey, this person has a platform, this person has an opportunity that we can build up, and from there we can build and expand further, then yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
wouldn't you? And I think the fact that you just said you hadn't had that many experiences growing up with black people, and so when you had it, it was a crash course. And that's what a lot of people have been experiencing recently. They've gotten this crash course in, oh my God, these are really black people, and they're not just what I've been seeing on the news. They are not just athletes. No.
Yeah.
There's an expression. We are not a monolith. You know what I'm saying? We're not all one type of black people.
That's so true, man. I feel like I've done, you know, a decent job, but I could do better. And I would love to do better when it comes to just surrounding myself more with diverse voices. And by the way, you made a great point, Jay, when you're like, look, you're not hiring me because I'm black. You're hiring me because I'm qualified. I'm the best for the role. I'm the best for whatever. God's honest truth, with Landline, I hit you up way early in the process. Mm-hmm. And I go, I'm writing you this thing because you are fucking great. And that's all that should matter. And so I think that's important, is like, let's bring all the talent together. Let's work together. And I think we'll get a lot more done. I think you're going to see this more on the indie level at first. I think with the studio level, it's going to be more shoehorned and more forced. Like,
oh, absolutely. I
like
agree.
They usually are. They're going to be like, see, we put two black people on this show.
And it's going to be prominent black people. It's going to be it's going to be the prominent or the off or on the verge. And again, this is no knock to anybody, but you'll see more the Daniel Kaluuya's, the Brian Tyree Henry's, mm-hmm. and all of them in a bunch of different stuff. Now, granted, I use those two, but at the same time, they have a massive resume. Brian Tyree Henry is about to be an MCU superhero.
Eternals. So,
he's about to be in Eternals. But I'm just using those as quick examples for anybody. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see those thrown together and be like, see, this is who we're doing. This is who we're doing.
We got three Brian Tyree Henry movies coming out this year.
Yep.
And like, that's great. But at the same time, you need to be giving new people opportunities as well. And that's why I think on the indie level, we're going to see more of that, because there's more of those opportunities to be had on the indie level. But I've been through this process, just so people know how this business is. Everyone's like, Hollywood's such a liberal business. It's such a liberal community. And I think Jay will agree with me on this. Yes and no. I think aesthetically, I think optics, they want to say they're liberal. But I have a bunch of stories, and I'll give you a quick one. I'll give you two quick ones. One, a buddy of mine just sold the pilot to Universal.
Okay.
I probably shouldn't have said the company's name, but whatever. I don't give a shit anymore. I don't give a shit. Fuck them. And they had a policy at that company that his whole writer's room, he has to hire a completely diverse writer's room. They didn't ever say a qualified one. They didn't ever say who he should be hiring. Like, here's a list of really talented people. They didn't give a shit as long as it had one of this person, one of that person, one of this person. And that's Hollywood's version of diversity. Mm-hmm. It's forced. It's like, here, I'll give you what it sounded like to me. Universal doesn't care who the names are. They don't care who the talent is. They just want to make sure there's color in that room. So they can then say at a studio, at a function or at stockholder meetings, oh no, we have rooms of writers filled with diverse people, diverse talent, but they don't give a shit who the talent is. Another thing that happens all the time is you'll pitch a show, and this goes back once again to 3/5 up the mountain to the top of the mountain. There are not that many black stars. And what people will always tell you is, I need a star to get the show made. I need a star to get the movie financed. I need a star. Well, the pool of black stars is so minimal compared to the pool of white stars. And when you start pitching black actors and actresses that are on the periphery, they're close to being stars, it's not good enough. They don't like it. It's not enough. So if you can't get Denzel and you can't get Viola, they don't care. Mm-hmm. They don't care. That's it. It's ball game. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, who's our white people? Who do we have in the white specter? I'll give you a great example. I'm doing a TV show right now. I sold a few months ago. And we're going over the list of actors we're sending it to, because we're going to put a star on it. We have a network that is like, hey, we have a bunch of networks that are like, hey, we want to make this show. Go get us a star. And at the top of my list was Halle Berry, number one on my list. And she signed to do a movie with Roland Emmerich. And after Halle Berry on that list, I had some other black actresses that I really liked for the role. I just wanted to make sure they were options.
Right.
And none of them were good enough. None of them. It was considered none of them will get us the financing. And that's your liberal Hollywood, just so you understand.
You know what else is crazy about that, too, is when you hear these studio execs say, oh, we'll get us a star because that's the only way we'll get financing, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to these major blockbuster movies.
Yep.
And because of course you want the star to bring the name, to bring the revenue in the box office, which we find out at the end of the day, that's all they care about. They don't care about a quality movie. Because I say that to say, because a lot of times you do that, these movies are trash. Or if you have a television show and they say, we need a star at the helm. Okay, cool. But guess what happens with your star at the helm? They don't end up being the star of the show. There's always someone else within that show who's the star.
Yeah.
again, I bring up Brian Tyree Henry. Yes, Donald Glover is a
Atlanta.
Star.
On yeah, Atlanta. I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say the same thing. Yep.
You know, yes, Donald Glover is a star on his own, and that's what helped him to be able to get Atlanta done and made. But out of that show, you have the star that is Brian Tyree Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Girls Trip was made off of Queen Latifah, Regina Hall, and Jada Pinkett Smith. The star became Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
And now you use her for different things, but it's the people, when sometimes people will pitch that name, and people have probably pitched these names before, and like, listen, I'm telling you, this person is going to do something. And you have those execs and you have those higher ups who are like, well, I don't think they can do it. And then I understand when it comes to money and financiers, they're like, well, should we back this person?
And maybe, by the way, Jay, what do they always call it, though, with money and the financiers and the production companies? A black film, a black TV show. It's not a film. It's not a TV show. It's a black
film
genre. Yep. Like the genres of black people. And you're like, no. How many people saw Girls Trip? Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. Like, it just always makes me laugh because I'll say – like the Halle Berry project, I said, oh, I'd love Halle Berry. And they're like, oh, okay, you want a black star. I'm like, no, I want a star. This is a show. I just like Halle Berry.
Right.
I like Regina Hall. I like Queen Latifah. Like, fuck. Like, it's, they put you in a box, man, immediately.
Instantly. And again, it's like, everything that start, like, there are certain things that become black shows. Yes, there are things that are black movies. They are designated those. But just because it has a black lead does not make it a black show.
Right. And let's not forget, you and I've talked about this before. When people say, I'm not a bigot, then why is it the first thing you ever thought about Kumail Nanjiani is the Indian guy?
Mm-hmm.
He's an Indian actor. He's an Indian comedian. They always put Indian for anything.
Yeah, you could have been like, yo, he's a stand-up comedian, he's the actor, he's the dude that helped make The Big Sick. You don't have to preface.
And that's why I always roll my eyes when people say that, because I'm like, don't lie. Like, one of the first three things guaranteed you think about Jay Washington when you put him in something is he's black.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fucking truth. And you never sit back and go, well, Matthew Aaron's in this because he's white. That white director, that white comedian, that white guy. That's what racism is. And that's not saying you're a bad person. That is saying we never preface white people as being white because you're already at the top of the mountain. You preface everybody else by their color, by their label, by their LGBTQ moniker, because they're different than white people. And that, I don't get how people don't get this. It's really basic.
But it's that old school.
They don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it.
It's that old school philosophy and of way of thinking and stuff like that.
Yeah. They don't want to be a part of the problem is what I think it is too. I think a lot of people probably agreed with my Facebook post yesterday talking about racism and bigotry, but I think how many of those people actually want to stand up, raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm a white man, so I'm a part of racism. They don't want to say that. They may agree with you, but they're like, well, I'm not going to say I'm a racist. I don't know, man. It's a really tricky issue, dude. And I mean, we're here talking on a podcast mainly about, well, I mean, it's going on right now in the country, but we're mainly talking about black civil rights and black equality in the business. And we shouldn't have to be. I should be talking to Jay about, hey, dude, how's stand-up going, even though we're in COVID? When do you think stand-up's coming back? What kind of film projects you got going on? What kind of podcasting are you doing right now? Because, by the way, everybody, Jay, just so you know, and then I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make a point about it. Jay, just so you know, he does a ton of comic conventions like I do, where we host panels. Mm-hmm. And Jay is one of the premier comic book geeks in the community, man. Like, if you want to know about what's going on in superhero lore, you listen to Jay Washington, whether that be formerly on with Collider or you listen to him on one of his podcasts, Mad Titan. Like, Jay is like one of your go-tos. I'll never forget how hard I laughed and how great of a geek moment it was when Jay posted the review for Swamp Thing. I was in my car in LA. I was in my car, and this is why I feel bad, because I don't see Jay enough, but I follow Jay like you would not believe. I was in my car in LA. Jay posted this YouTube video for the with a friend of yours, and it was a review of Swamp Thing, mm-hmm. the TV show. And I laughed for 8 minutes straight. Like, I'm dying. I had to pull over. I'm parked. And it was just one of those moments. And so like, none of that has to do with Jay being black. None of it. Like, how funny are you in Landline? Dude, you fucking steal that fucking movie.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
You play so a best friend like any best friend would be in anybody's life. They would beg to have that kind of best friend that you are in that movie. It's just like, and none of that has to do with being black. And that's kind of where we need to get to. But by the way, that Swamp Thing review is so fucking
bad. Oh, thank you, man. That's because the show was so fucking bad. Sorry for the cursing. But
It's good. I couldn't watch it after that. I'm like, I can't take this show seriously.
So here's something I think a lot of people don't get with what we're going through. When you say we're in a current new civil rights movement,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't pay attention to, this is the first time in history, not even in the 50s and 60s, that all 50 states at the same time are protesting one thing. Mm-hmm. For the first time in history.
It's a great thing, though.
It's around the world.
Yeah. In Berlin, Germany.
In Germany, they're doing this. I don't think people understand, for people who are still having bigoted views, who are having racist views, mm-hmm. who don't get why this is a thing, like how this is big of a thing, because it's happening all over the world. And again, it's about the at the heart of this protest and this movement, the unjust killing of black men and women by the police, and not to mention these other racist incidents. Ahmaud Arbery, for instance, I can keep going down the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we talk about this, and then we talk about how black men and women are treated as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so people forget about that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think another important thing to bring up about Germany is, they kind of went through this, and it scorned their entire community. It scorned their entire country for such a long period of time. It brought such shame upon their entire country that they're now a very liberal country, and we're seeing them come together for us and for the rest of the world in this moment. They're protesting as well. But does the United States want to continue having that level of shame and scorn that the Germans had? I mean, it's embarrassing, dude. We have the world already does not look very fond upon us due to the lack of leadership in the White House.
Yes.
Do you also want to be known as these backwards, hillbilly, redneck motherfuckers who bring shame and scorn upon our country because you're afraid you're going to lose something you don't even have? What are you going to lose? What are you going to lose? I don't understand what this thing is they're afraid of losing.
Well, because you're so used to, again, we keep talking about the status quo with things, and they're so used to being the quote unquote top of the food chain. They're used to being the big dogs and the ones who make all the decisions and the rules because they feel like they can control the way everything goes. And the fact is, it's not saying black people want to control the way things go. They don't want to rule over anybody.
They just want the same piece of pie you have.
Yep.
That's all it is. That's all it is. Imagine you and your sister at the dinner table and you bought a pizza and there's a slice that's 2/5 bigger than another slice. And you're both staring at the two slices. You know you get jealous over the person that gets the bigger slice. We've always been that way. Like, of course black people want the same size slice that we have. Mm-hmm. Why not? And by the way, There's enough pizza to go around.
It's enough pizza to go around.
There's enough to go around when you have Jeff Bezos, who is almost worth $1 trillion. There's enough to go around.
Which, as I'll say about Jeff Bezos, when he's almost worth $1 trillion, I understand some people are mad because of what he does when his, you know, the way they say his pay structure is. Sure. I get it. But I also will say this as a small devil's advocate. When you make a business, you make a business to make as much money as you possibly can. And then people were like, oh my God, he's one of these billionaires who have constantly profited throughout the pandemic. And it's like, yo, I don't think y'all get it. Everybody's buying stuff off Amazon left and right.
Mm-hmm. There's no stores open. That's where you go.
Like, everybody's at Amazon. So, of course, unfortunately, he's going to make a whole bunch of money.
And he has. And by the way, did you hear that? Jay wasn't asking for Jeff Bezos to give him money. Oh, Jay, what the fuck? I thought everyone wants handouts now.
Yo, I don't care. Like, dude can have his money. That's good for him.
Yeah.
Like, fam, you got your money. That's on you, bro. I'm cool with that. I don't care. I don't need – everybody's like, oh, he could go ahead and pay for it to end hunger and stuff like that. I'm like, yo, let him do what he does. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. That's on him. That's not on me.
And by the way, he's the one that's got to answer at the end of the day. It's his life. If money is all he cares about – I mean, look at all the shit Elon Musk is going through, where it's almost like, dude, don't matter how rich you are. By the way, I know Jay can speak for this too. We know a handful or more of famous rich people in L.A., and I don't know if you've experienced this, Jay, like I have, but the richer they come, the more miserable they seem to fucking be.
Yes, indeed. Yes, and fucking indeed.
I mean, all they do is complain and bitch. They hate their wives, or they hate their ex-wives, or their kids are milking them dry, and they're not doing anything with their lives. And I shouldn't say never, but I've met a very few rich people in Los Angeles or New York who are like, boy, life is grand. I'm so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, there's a song, "More Money, More Problems." And it didn't come out of thin air.
It did not. People are so quick to be like, oh, well, you got all this money. That means your life is great and blah, blah, blah. And like, that's not always the case.
No. And you got to remember too, you know, with the lifestyle changes, the ratio of what you're spending changes as well. So I know a lot of people that aren't exactly rich, but they're not poor. But in order to live in LA, you have to pay X on your mortgage that you would be paying a fraction of in Wisconsin. Mm. And so that money you think people have in LA, they don't really have it. You still got to pay for where you live and what you – celebrities don't get free homes. Like, they don't get, you know, they don't get free shit like that. They get free shit that's meaningless. Oh, my God, they got a 60-inch TV. Like, okay, cool. But, like, they don't get a free $20 million home. And, you know, I'm not saying poor celebrities, but I'm just saying it's like, I'm sure Jeff Bezos has his own problems, too. You know, and if he doesn't want to share his money at the end of the day, that's something he's going to have to answer to.
Yeah, that's something he has to answer to. Like, we can't be his judge, jury, and executioner.
No, we're not God.
We're not God. So, you know, it's just so much stuff. It's like, again, as much as you just brought up, people swear up and down because you live in Los Angeles or you're on a TV show or you're in a movie, you're instantaneously rich. And that is not the case at all.
Mm-mm. I don't know who's reporting these numbers too of what people make on TV shows and movies. I think publicists inflate the numbers to make them seem more famous or whatever. Because I'll tell you something. I know people that are supposedly making X because they're on this show or that show or whatever. Their house ain't that great. Or they're riding a fucking beat up Ford. Like, I'm sort of skeptical of where all this money is supposedly going.
They dead ass in a Prius. Quit playing.
Yeah, I've seen it.
All right, let's stop playing. They dead ass in a Prius.
Because you know how it is. I mean, you go to stand-up clubs all the time to do stand-up, and if you're working with, like, sure, Damon Wayans is fucking loaded. But if you're working with, who's like Tom Green. I don't know if Tom Green's really loaded. He has a nice house in the hills. But, I mean, I think Tom still has to work.
Yeah, and it's probably one of those, he bought the house already, and if he didn't have the house paid for,
right,
he would, you know, he would be probably struggling, because a lot of people forget that. A lot of people don't own their homes.
No, no, you got 30-year mortgages, or you're, and in L.A., this is common, you're renting.
You're renting a home.
Mm-hmm.
You're literally renting the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a crazy lifestyle out there, man. I don't know how you and I have survived with L.A., honestly.
I don't either, shit.
and let me tell you, barely, you know, I just want things to be better, because Jay has kids. I got Liam. We kind of, you know, I want Liam to be able to hang out with your kids and them not to have to think about all this shit, man.
Right. I mean,
I don't want this to be a thing.
You know what? But that's the thing. The thing is, racism is not, it's not genetic. It's taught.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, seem to forget that one, that big issue too. Racism is taught. No one is born racist. No one is born hating another person because of their skin color. No one is born despising someone. No, that never happens. This all comes from being taught. This comes from like, years of parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents saying, well, you know, those people, you know, consistently, that's where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's 1,000% right. And that's why we need to get Donald Trump out of office, because it's a trickle down effect from the top to the bottom. And when your leader is, I'm going to say this because I don't want to ever get sued, allegedly racist. You can take solace in knowing what I.
You can't see my face, because yeah. I was lying.
I mean, let's be real. this guy was eaten out of a taco shell, saying how much he loves Mexican.
Right, like okay.
And at that time, everyone's like, oh, it's an innocent thing. Yeah, it's an innocent thing. Really? He didn't know what he was doing? Okay. All right. Well, then he's as dumb as he looks.
Man, like, this dude said, everybody's like, well, what exactly is he said is racist? Like, do we really need to point out his exact words? You want the list? Do you need the transcript? Which, by the way, may be hard to comprehend when you actually... I've seen transcripts recently of things he said, and it's like, you like, this isn't real. You're like, that's not real. And it's like, oh no, that is real.
That's true. My mom goes on walks with these old white people in our neighborhood, and my mom hates Donald Trump, and my mom thinks he's a racist and he's a pig. And these old white people always tell my mom, no, that was edited. That was edited that way. He never said that. That's the mainstream media editing his words. And my mom's like, no, I saw the fucking press conference. That's like word for word. Like there was no skip in the tape.
Right. Like that was him saying it live. Yeah. It was live. Like what the fuck are y'all talking about?
They're
like,
I don't convinced it was all edited.
Like, no, that's not an edit. That is real. But again, people just want to, they want to see what they want to see. They want to hear what they want to hear because it makes them feel good about it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, you know, now you got all these companies, by the way, all of a sudden who are like, yeah, we're for the black community too. Because you saw the numbers and you saw you saw that everyone else seems to be too.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Uber a week ago? I just got an email from
Uber. I just got the Uber email as well.
You got it? We stand for the black community. First of all, let's talk about that. How many Uber rides have you been denied in your life, Jay?
I'm not going that way. Okay, come on, let's be real. Mm-hmm. Okay, spare me with this one. Oh, on Sunday, we announced a $1 million donation to the Equal Justice Initiative and the Center for Policing Equity to support their important work. Okay, all right.
I'll give you some shit about Uber. Uber, two times, I called for a ride when I was in Boys Town. And as soon as the person saw what kind of neighborhood Boys Town was and what was going on, yeah, it was at night. It was Friday night, clubbing, whatever. They canceled the ride. One guy seriously canceled it as soon as he rolled up to me. And I called Uber and I told him, you know, I was just profiled. And these homophobic drivers don't want to pick me up and give me a ride. and they didn't do shit about it. Nothing. Fuck Uber. That bullshit email.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. Miss me with all this shit. Because, like, the thing is, the fact that people are just, these companies are just now doing it, and I know people will be like, well, isn't it better that they are doing it? No, because now they're like, oh, shit, if we don't follow suit, because they weren't going to.
Right.
They're like, if we don't follow suit, we're going to look bad. Well, you kind of look bad now for doing it just because.
Let's say these protests weren't continuing, and let's say this was a bust. It was like 2 days of protesting for George Floyd, and then no one came out anymore. It was over with. You would never see these companies put out shit.
Yep, never.
Not shit. But the fact of the matter is the protests are still going on, and the numbers are in, and most of America thinks Donald Trump is doing a terrible job with Pat Robertson. Saying that Donald Trump, you ain't cool right now. This ain't good. Pat Robertson, and you know he's racist as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, when Pat Robertson is like, no, right. No. I think people don't understand that. When certain people that you knew are diehard racists mm-hmm. who were like balls to the wall with dude have hit a point where they're just like, I can't.
Yeah, right. I cannot.
And the only people that have stayed there with him, I just said this on another podcast I did. The only people that have stayed there with him have been people like Rand Paul, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Because they don't care about him. They're like, we need his fan base.
Yep.
They're like, if we go ahead and say no, that he should be gone, then we won't get his base to vote for us. At some point, I think you need to realize that that ship has sailed, bro. Because if Steve King can be kicked out of Iowa, you can lose your job in a minute now.
Mark my words, if Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham or any of these guys think Donald Trump is going to lose in a landslide to Joe Biden, you're going to see them all of a sudden come out and be like, we don't really like this thing that Donald's doing. And it'll happen in October. Yeah. Like, we don't think you're going to see a report. We don't think he handled the protests well. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're going to distance themselves from him because they're like, we don't want to lose. Because, look, they all got to run. This is a business. Don't think for 1 second that, and this is Democrats too, that the reason they're rushing to get criminal justice reform done right now, by the way, in an election year. I mean, Amy Klobuchar.
People forget that.
Look, this is pure speculation, but my theory on why these other three cops were just arrested was Amy Klobuchar was getting killed.
Killed. Oh, she was getting destroyed.
And I think she was like, wait a minute, I was in the running for vice president, and I think Joe Biden stopped returning her phone calls. Like, she was lighting a cigar, put her feet up. She's like, I'm going to be VP, and then Joe wasn't answering her calls, and she's like, uh-oh.
Well, no, I think that the fact that the biggest part that when it came out that she was the one who let dude off with over 18, that was when Joe Biden stopped, like, I cannot even.
Yeah, right.
Joe Biden stopped answering her calls then. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't even the fact that, like, yeah, you're a senator, but when the AG of Minnesota was like, oh, y'all think we playing? You think this is a game now? Okay, so watch what's going to happen. The three of them, y'all go ahead and hit these. Y'all got the aid and abetting charges because you're complicit. And, oh, you thought this third degree was going to be easy for you? No, bro. You got second degree murder. You better beat that.
Yeah, and then Amy took a lot of credit for it. She really pressed for it. She really worked at it. And it's like, man, you got to remember people. But this is also a good thing. Look at the positive of this. It's an election year. We need Donald Trump out of office. And if you want to get shit done, this is how you get shit done. You protest. And maybe you riot a little. Maybe you cause. Look, no protest was successful without damage done. That's the truth. That's the truth. No protest got things done without there being some property damage.
Yep.
Because the only time people seem to listen is when money is lost. And by the way, it's not just those people listening then. Then insurance companies are listening. And they're like, look, we are going to have to hand out a ton of fucking money. You better shape up here. And then lobbyists are listening. And then politicians are listening. And then politicians are like, I got to get voted back in office in 5 months, 6 months. I better do something right now. I don't want to be on the wrong side of this. I'll get voted out. This is good timing for this to happen. And yes, politicians are scumbags, but have them work in your favor. Have them do it in your favor.
I don't think people realize that. People don't. Again, the whole, the insurance companies are the reason why governments are opening businesses back up.
Yep.
Because the longer stuff like these, I'll go comic book conventions, for example. Comic book conventions as a whole initially were going to be done for the year. Yep. And the insurance companies would have had to pay the convention hall cancellation fees, the appearance cancellation fees, and you know, so many things. But that's what the insurance companies were going to pay. But the moment that the government, that the local government says our state is operational to run, force majeure goes out the window.
Yep.
Goes out the window. And so now you have to run. Now you have to have these things operate. And this, again, this isn't just the government. This is insurance companies. This shit is bigger than what a lot of people think.
Yeah, well, because these are the people that run the government. Lobbyists, insurance companies, Wall Street, people with actual money.
Like real money.
Who runs the government. Yeah, real money. Yeah, that's exactly how it is. So when you protest and when you loot, even looting and even rioting. I'm with everyone else. At some point in time, looting is a crime, but the first two nights, fuck it. And the reason I say fuck it is the message needed to be sent. It needed to be sent.
Yeah, it did.
America needed to be shook. That's exactly what happened.
And it's been shaken to it. And it, again, it's shaken on its foundation. It needs to be shaken to its core.
Yep. No, and that's what's next. And I hope if there's even a pause in the politicians doing something about all this, that they go out and they fucking protest and riot more and more and more.
Well, what people believe, and I'm guaranteeing you, this is what politicians, especially those on the Hill, are, and those, I hate to say it this way, those on the right are really thinking. Well, we learned how this culture is nowadays. They're only angry at something for a moment. Right. So let us let it die down, and then we can go back. It'll be business as normal.
Yep. Yep. That's what I think people are expecting. I think they're like, oh, this will go away in a week or two. Mm-hmm. And we need it to not go away in a week or two. That doesn't mean more looting and you know, more rioting or like they were outside my girl's house. The Latin Kings were out there the other day causing trouble with black protesters and black rioters. Like,
well, here's the thing with that too. If we can talk about that for a second,
please do.
Okay, so the riots and all the looting mm-hmm. and riots that were happening in Chicago and everywhere that we know for a fact are not protesters.
Yep.
That we know for a fact that you're always going to have them assholes who are just trying to take advantage of a situation to steal and get free stuff. It's just is what it is. Now, for the Latin Kings to say, oh, we're protecting our neighborhood, in theory, it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got them out there with bats and everything on the streets, and harassing any black person they see, and the police are game with it, that's a problem.
That's the problem. Yep.
Because, no, I don't care who you are. You've had Proud Boys walking down the street in Chicago. Like, yo, this lets you know how big of an issue this whole thing is. And then it came out that on the police scanner, they were like, yo, let them, the blacks and browns, let them shoot it out against themselves. Let them take care of it. Again, this is a problem.
Yeah.
There's a video I saw. There's an Instagram that follows all the wild stuff that happens in Chicago. There's a video that is of the Latin Kings throwing a rod through a dude's car, causing his car to crash. And it's a black dude with a rod in his chest, and he is dying. And the dude clearly is not a gang member or anything, but because he was black.
Driving while black.
Literally, because he is black.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They get mad. They sit there and do that. Like, come on, man. Y'all can't, you can't tell me this shit isn't just as bigger, is bigger than what it just looks like, because this is ridiculous.
Cicero,
it's
the same thing right now. Cicero, you have guys sitting on top of their businesses with AK-47s and God knows what else. and you can't even innocently drive through that neighborhood if you're a black person right now.
Nope.
Someone will open fire. It's bad. It's bad. So,
and the person will be dead, but then they give the person's going to be dead who they shoot, and then you're going to hear the, oh, I'm sorry, I was just protecting myself, and then it's found out, and then it's some bullshit-ass apology, but that doesn't bring back a person's life. Oh,
like the samurai sword guy? This was my favorite. Everybody's posting this video about, like, oh, my God, the protesters. First of all, forget about all the dead black people. One guy got injured by, quote, the protesters. If you watch the full video for context.
He brought a samurai sword to protect a fake samurai sword to protect a bar he likes. And so he thought he was finna be about something, and they gave his ass the business.
And he went after a kid who didn't even do anything, who was carrying a fucking skateboard.
Yep. And so then, and he didn't die, by the way, because everybody was like, oh, they killed him. No, he didn't die. And that's just like the dude in Salt Lake City, the old white dude who drew his bow and arrow. Like, yo, I don't think people understand this. They're like, oh, what's he going to do? When you knock your arrow, that's when you put your arrow on the string, the drawstring. When you draw your bow, you automatically, it's like you pulling down the firing pin. You automatically set all of that pressure to go off that arrow.
Yeah.
He was ready to use it to shoot somebody. And then he sat there and tried to say, oh, some black African-Americans beat me up. Not knowing that the whole thing had been caught on video.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, he's been charged with like 3 felonies. But that's been a big thing happening, too. You had that white lady who everybody thought was an old woman who turns out is 30, fat as shit in a wheelchair.
Oh, the Target broad.
And the Target broad. See, and then they sit there and try to be like, they just jumped me. No, bitch, you were stabbing people trying to protect Target. Yeah. You don't work that. Do you understand how stupid that sounds?
I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh at this, but it's so hilarious to me that the 3 people they're defending – could you come up with more ridiculous scenarios? A nerdy white dude with a samurai sword, another nerdy white dude with a bow and arrow, and a 30-year-old woman who looks like she's 60, defending Target where she don't even work. She's stabbing people.
She's stabbing, and some people try to justify. Well, she's trying to stop the looters. First of all, that's not her job.
No.
It's not her job.
No.
She is not a law enforcement official. Secondly, no law enforcement official should just be randomly stabbing people.
No. Like, what is she doing? And by the way, have we talked about she was stabbing people? She's fortunate that all these looters did was spray her with a fire extinguisher and not
fire hose. That's all they did.
That's all they did.
Most of them that were hitting her to knock that damn knife out of her hand.
Right. Right. Do you know how lucky she, bow and arrow guy and samurai sword guy are not to be dead? If they wanted to kill you, they would.
They would have.
They would.
I don't think people realize that. People are like, oh, they could have killed these. No. In that moment, they would have.
They
could have. They could have. And that shows you, first of all, for like, you know, even for some of the looters at that point in time, how much, not even just the looters, the protesters, how much resolve they have and wherewithal to not take your life because you are literally planning on taking theirs.
Well, I find this hilarious, too. I was just watching ABC News Live out of the corner of my eye when we're talking, and it says 86% of America is on the side of the protesters. Are you telling me like 14% literally voted bigots on like their survey? Like, what was the other option on the survey?
I really want to know that.
Like, well, if only 86% are for the protesters, what are the other 14% saying?
You know,
it blows my mind, man. It blows my mind. I mean, I just can't wait till you and I can get back to work. And I promise you, and you know, I've always tried to stick to my word with everything. I promise you, this summer when I'm in LA, you and I, we're going to get together. We're going to get together with other people. We're going to come up with projects. We're going to pile together our networks and our connections. We're going to get something going.
I'm all for it, my brother. Anytime. Just let me, you already know. Let me know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm all about it. I want to get together though. Unfortunately, I wish we had more like entertainment stuff to talk about. There's nothing going on. I think just because you're on the show, I would love your take on the Ruby Rose situation.
Oh, here we go. Thank God she's gone, first and foremost.
Yeah. Let me I know. She was bad.
She was not just because she was bad for the show as what you saw on screen, mm-hmm. because she was bad for the cast and crew. Also, she never wanted to be – she wanted to be the lead of a show but not be the lead of a show. She only wanted to work 1 to 2 days a week.
She didn't know what the hours were.
Yeah, I don't know what you thought this was, sweetie. You're the lead of a superhero show. This is about you. You got to work. So she only wanted to work 1 to 2 days a week. She hated – she was like, oh, this is too much. And then started telling people, well, I don't need this. I have my feature film career. Well, go on the hell on. And so also she made the crew's life a living hell working with her.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad she's. That.
Yeah. So I'm glad she's gone. Now the thing of they're just getting rid of Kate Kane altogether.
Which is weird though, because that means do they have to get rid of her mother and her father and all those?
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. You just this is what you do. You kill Kate Kane dies, plain and simple.
Sure.
Because you can't do the Kate Kane has disappeared like Bruce Wayne and Batman have disappeared for 3 years and nobody can put two. I swear for God, I don't get how people cannot do that. But anyway. You say Kate Kane has died. Now, the only person out of that essential cast that you really have to keep is Cameron Johnson, who plays Luke Fox.
Sure.
That's the only one.
Totally.
That's the only one. Now, what you do is if you kill Kate Kane and you have something happen with Alice, we don't have to keep seeing that dumbass her, Jacob Kane, and you know, the Kate Kane, Jacob Kane, and Alice dichotomy. We don't need that. The wife, old girl, her stepsister, her mother is dead, if I'm not mistaken. So you don't need the stepsister anymore. She can move away from Gotham. So you get rid of that. It's not difficult at all.
Now, what's your feeling, though, on them bringing in a totally new character, totally new actress? And then the other thing I was going to ask you is, what does this do for the Hush storyline? Is Hush not happening now?
So, granted, I think they never, here's the first thing. Batwoman was always set to go 2 seasons, no matter what. Mm-hmm. That was always the thing. So I think you have to just pivot around. You can still do the Hush storyline in a sense. You just have to pick it up.
Yeah.
You have to pick it up because of the way the breakdown went for what they're looking for. She's a bad girl on the wrong side of the tracks who gets her life turned around.
Right.
So you can eventually do that because you can let the situation with Hush be happening and eventually somehow, some way, her and Luke cross paths. Somehow, some way, she finds, like, she can be a thug that break a hoodlum, a criminal that breaks into Wayne Tower and finds the Batcave, I guess, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And you do that again, but Kate has to have died, and now the city is without a bat again in a situation with Hush. You can't go the exact long Halloween storyline, but you have to expound on it. Like, yo, first we had Batman, he disappears. Now Batwoman is dead. And so now something has to happen.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go too. I did not know it was only supposed to go 2 seasons.
The thing is,
it was a 2 season story arc.
Well, the thing is, they don't tell you this at first. Mm-hmm. They can't tell you out the gate that Batwoman for sure will be around 2 seasons. Number one, Batwoman was always going to get a second season because you cannot cancel the first openly lesbian-led female superhero show after 1 season.
No.
You cannot, because no matter what the ratings were, no matter what the reviews were, people are going to always say, oh, you didn't give this show a chance, no matter what.
That's right. There's 2 shows on Showtime, the new L Word, and then there's that other show about I guess she's not even a girl. She just doesn't like – I forget what it's called. She doesn't identify, though, with, like, anything. And so they have 2 shows like that. The ratings were both terrible for both shows. They renewed them both for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, well, this is our non-gender specific show, and this is our lesbian show, and we're not going to cancel them after 1 season. That's how it looks to me. So I'm kind of with you on that. And of course, they're going to cast another lesbian in this role. Is there anyone that you like for the role? I think it's interesting that Sonya Deville really wants it.
My problem with Sonya Deville, and I've heard nothing but great stories about Daria as a person.
Yeah, she's great, right?
I've heard great stories about Daria as a person. I just don't know as Daria as the lead of it as an actress, because
be worse than Ruby Rose.
This is true. I think that's the part. Like, the bar was already set so low.
Yeah.
But also, I don't want them to do, Like, if you're going to give it to her, it's going to be a real big thing. But also, I don't want them to do what they did with Ruby Rose and like, oh, she's an open lesbian. Yeah. Let's just use her. Yes, there are a bunch of openly lesbian actresses who can be perfect for this role. And it goes back to what we stated earlier. You can't just say, oh, who's the star? Because in this situation right now, at this point, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
It's not. You just got to have a damn good actress.
But I think knowing Greg Berlanti and knowing what they're trying to do over there, I think 100% they're going to hire an open lesbian.
I'd be
absolutely.
Oh, they have to. No, they're absolutely. No, for sure. I mean, yeah. This is Berlanti. I know some people who work with Berlanti directly. This, and Berlanti has always been, for those who don't know, Greg Berlanti is an openly gay man, mm-hmm. openly gay. Mm-hmm. We know this. So every single one of his shows have had at minimum one openly LGBTQ character, no matter what.
That's right.
So this is always going to be the case with that. The thing is, it's the individual they put in the role now. It's who. Because there are a bunch of openly lesbian actresses. Like, I would not be surprised, and from the bottom of my heart, if Kiersey Clemons gets it.
Mm, that's good. I like that. Oof. I like that a lot. She is great. Fuck, I love her. Oh, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good. That would be good. And she would be perfect in that role. Ugh. For those that don't know, Kiersey's fantastic. She was in The Only Living Boy in New York and some other films I've seen her in. The one with Nick Swartzen that I love, Hearts Beat Aloud, I believe. Hearts Beat Loud. And
she was supposed to be Iris in the Flash movie
whenever I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's supposed to be Iris West in the Flash movie whenever that finally happens.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, is that even happening now after
knocking
girls out and in
Iceland? So here's the thing with that video.
Yeah.
I if you look at that, and I really thought about that when I heard about it first. I was like, oh shit, Ezra Miller choked the chick out. Now we gotta get a new Flash.
Right.
If you watch that video,
yeah,
it looks like they are both playing with each other.
Okay.
The only person, because she's giggling, he's saying it playfully. The only person who probably isn't sure is the camera person.
Yeah, right.
Because she's giggling the whole time.
Yeah. I do remember she was, yeah, I just was always wondering if that's a reaction. And then everyone at the bar said that it was an actual fight. I don't know, man. And Ezra's an interesting dude to begin with. You never know what's going to happen with Warner Brothers, though. Let's just be honest. You never have any idea.
Know what's going to happen with Warner Brothers.
No. Birds of Prey, man. I talk to people over at Warner Brothers. I mean, I don't want to throw any of them under the bus, but Birds of Prey, this is before it didn't do well. And they said to me, they're like, if it doesn't do well, don't expect to see The Flash.
Well, here's the thing with Birds of Prey, though. But here's the problem. You technically can't – see, that's the thing with Birds of Prey. You technically can't say it didn't do well. The reason being, it never got to have its international opening.
Yeah, no, sure. I totally agree with you. It's just the end of the day. It's the money that's in the coffers for them from it, and it's not a lot.
No. I know that. I'm 100%, you know, so I'm in agreement on that. But we also remember and know, you know this as well as I do, mm-hmm. those of us in the industry, blockbuster movies are not made for here.
Mm-mm. No, they're not.
They're not made for here. And Birds of Prey is a blockbuster movie. They're made for China. And they needed the Chinese debut. And it don't be surprised if it still gets it once the theaters open.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they wanted that. That's the one they were waiting on. They figured, I guarantee you, they knew it was a possibility that movie wouldn't do well financially and for the box office here in America. I bet you they knew it. But it's the fact that they knew, damn, right when this happens, you know, right when we're about to open this and we need it to drop in China, the countries get shut down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's important to remember with Birds of Prey, because that was at least an extra 50, 60 million right there.
Should 50, 60. I'd give it way more than that, brother.
I'm hoping. But I'm saying low ball, you're looking at 50, 60. Because there was always the question mark of how the Chinese market was going to respond to a female superhero film. You know, but I think it would have done well over there, and it would have, that would have put it in net profit, I think. It would have been at least very close, but I do know my friends there were like, oh my God, and the test screenings, they didn't like the test screenings. Things were just not going well with that movie. And it turned out way better than I think people give it credit for, but
oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else going on. They pushed all the superhero movies back till the end of the year next year. I don't know what's going on with Marvel slate now. COVID's fucked that up.
Well, I don't even, you know, Marvel slate was one thing. I mean, that was fine. They were adjusted. Marvel yeah. slate was adjusted perfectly. It's Sony that's messed up Marvel slate.
That's a good
because point. When yep. they shifted Spider-Man's date,
yep.
they had to move a bunch of stuff around because Spider-Man has to go into Doctor Strange, but the problem is WandaVision is supposed to go into Doctor Strange as well.
Yeah, so, okay, that makes sense then. So, I mean, it's just really a confusing time right now. We don't know what's going on with big movies. We don't know what's going on with TV shows because of the COVID stuff. Hopefully we're going to get to a point, like they're saying, well, the CW, they could still do superhero shows. They just really can't do stunts. Well, then what's the fucking point?
Well, that's not what I've heard. So what they have to
okay, do. Okay, so what did you hear? Yeah.
So this is what's got to happen. First of all, when you go into Canada now, you have to, you're automatically quarantined for 14 days, no matter yeah. what.
And so, and just remind people, so everyone knows, they film all the CW shows in Vancouver.
Minus Black Lightning, which shoots right. in Atlanta. That's right. The only one. But they're just currently writing, that's the fourth season for that. But all of the superhero shows, the other CW shows, they film in Vancouver. So what they're trying to do, and they're trying to see if we can figure out how to do well, is to get all of the cast and crew up there at the same time, fly them all in together, have them all quarantine in some big
start
hotel.
Their 14 days.
Yep. Have them be in a hotel, a house, or whatever it is, a giant house, a community, whatever it needs to be. Once you knock that out, once you got that 14 days out the way, and you see everybody is good to go, start banging out episodes.
Yeah.
And you're not filming the same. So, like, you may be filming, you won't know what you're filming. Like, you might because normally it's 8 days to film an hour TV show. But you're not normally, in this case, you're not just filming your regular episode. You're filming parts of every single episode you need to film.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's what I've been hearing, too, with indie films and things like that, especially pertaining to Canada. I mean, I know a lot of people are already going to, like, the Ukraine and the, you know, all where else? Prague. Mm-hmm. And they're filming there because there's basically no restrictions up there. It's back in America that we're not sure how things are going to go yet. And I know it's really interesting, man, because they're running out of content. They're going to need to buy more stuff. I think they're going to have to make some quick and dirty stuff. I think a lot of the big budget stuff is going to be a work in progress because you need to put out stuff. You need to put out product.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't see why they can't be doing stunts. I mean, if Vince McMahon can be doing stunts right now, like if the wrestlers can wrestle right now.
Hey, I need you to realize.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I need you to realize we're talking about Florida.
Yes, I know. I know. And he owns Florida, as we have found out.
It is not. People be like, oh, what about the WWE? It's Florida.
I can't say.
That is why AEW is running. AEW yes. runs in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, yeah.
It's Florida.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, from what we understand, no wrestlers have gotten COVID yet, from what we understand. Now, do I also think Vince would let it out if any of them did? No. But, you know, if they're able to wrestle, then you're able to do stunts for fucking, you know, Batwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, same, you know, so Black Lightning, you can do stunts. There'll be, I don't see any reason that can't be happening.
But again, that's just the, like, again, when we're talking about stunts for superhero shows, that's Canada. Canada yeah. has to say, let's make it happen.
Sure, that's true. The only other thing I got for you is, as a wrestler, people may not know this about you, but my first introduction to you, actually, I always loved you doing stand-up, but my first introduction to you was you and one of my favorites of all time, the potato, Willie DeBomb. Willie DeBomb Richardson, you've tagged up together.
Team Dammit.
people that don't know, you have professionally wrestled. You are a professional wrestler. You could always put the boots on and get back in.
And I do out here. And I actually am
nowadays.
And I actually am. I actually am back in the ring out here. That's been a thing I've been doing. You know, I was doing a lot of great. I was doing a lot of good shows. Getting back into the swing of things out here before everything shut down.
Now that you've gotten into really good shape, but for those that don't know, Jay had a little health issue
Jay almost died 2 years ago.
Yeah, Jay almost died and completely changed his diet and started working out even more than he worked out before, which for those that are not friends with Jay lives in the gym.
Unfortunately, his gym is at home on his floor now.
Dude, it's got to be so rough for you right now.
Oh, dude, it's so bad.
I bet. And so now that you're, like, you've lost all this weight, have you felt it in the ring? Does it feel, like, better?
Well, I felt it in the ring, definitely. It feels a little bit better. It's easier to move. But it's also still trying to get that ring, you know, that ring rust, that ring timing, that ring cardio. That's the biggest part, but it's been great, man. I can move. I'm lighter on my feet. I can move around more. I can, you know, I feel better just in life in general.
And that's where COVID's fucking you the hardest is. For those that don't understand, like, when you're a wrestler, there's a big timing thing. It's all about timing and cardio. And there's a difference between cardio and ring cardio. And because you're using, like, you're lifting weight, you're doing a lot of things at one time. So when you're in wrestling and you're doing the ring cardio right now and everything, and this COVID hits, it kind of stops all your progress you were getting on getting back in the ring, doesn't it?
Dude, it just was like, I want to be in the ring so bad.
I know. I bet. And then, what do you think all these empty arena shows WWE and AEW are doing?
I
get through them.
You know what? For me, it's like, I tried to watch them because I had to remember being when I trained and even when I still do train, you run matches and you have to learn how to work the match without a crowd. I get it. But when we're watching on this level where people are playing to the crowd that clearly has no crowd, I'm like, yo, like,
what? I know it's kind of weird watching Cody play to fellow wrestlers. Like, and Cody acts like there's like 40,000 people in the house. And I'm kind of like, dude, I'm like, really?
I mean, I like the fact that AEW started that, what they did, heels on one side, faces on the other.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool, yeah.
And it helped add to make a few extra storylines.
Oh, my God, these fake fans that the WWE is doing, though. I mean, it's better than what they were doing before, which was nothing. But
yeah, like, but the trainees are just terrible.
Oh, my God. Well, I hear it's because they're being told what to do. And, you know, there's a freedom with AEW and Impact that WWE does not. So WWE used to allow a lot of freedom. Now they allow zero freedom.
Mm-hmm.
None. It is scripted to, if you don't get a word right, you will get chewed out in the back. If you miss
a word,
lose
your job.
And you gotta remember, people are like, oh, why isn't so-and-so charismatic? Well, you don't really know that because so-and-so is not an actor and they got to memorize a script. And then when you go out there and have to like regurgitate a script, you don't get to be your true charismatic self. So that was what was so refreshing. If you watch NXT, Triple H is a little more lenient about this. Like Drake Maverick, he just came into the studio. He cut his own promo. You could tell it wasn't scripted. He didn't even look at the hard camera. And you're like, that is the most real thing I've seen in WWE in months. And it was great. And it was great. There's this freedom they allow in AEW and Impact where they're like, hey, man, we trust you. We trust your character. Go be yourself. And that's not saying you don't need writers. I'm not a wrestling fan that believes that writers aren't necessary. I think writers are necessary. What I don't think is that scripts need to be word for word. And that writers need to write these guys their promos and everything. What writers should be doing is writing the scenes, writing the storylines, writing the characters with the wrestlers.
Yep.
That's what it should be. And I've heard that it used to kind of be like that. Brian Gewirtz was like that a lot. Brian worked with Edge and Christian. He worked with The Rock. He still works with The Rock. and he would bring to Vince. He's like, hey, this is what The Rock is going to do, because The Rock and him developed it. That's what's missing from the WWE now. There's no camaraderie between the writers and the wrestlers.
No, it's because also on the show. Because there's such a it's such a fickle position.
Mm-hmm.
Being a writer, like, also you're at Vince McMahon's beckoning call.
Yeah.
You know, you're 14 there
hours a day, usually
14 hours a day, you know, stuff has to change the last minute. If Vince feels like it, he just doesn't like what's happening. You're changing an entire show. It's so much.
It is. It's a lot. It's a lot. I've always kind of wondered. I'm like, cause you know, Jay, you're pretty well connected in that business and everything. I'm kind of always wondering why you haven't dipped your toe into doing it like professionally, even if you're not wrestling, producing, writing, agenting, anything.
Well,
like
I would love, well, most of the time. So here's the thing. I would love to do it. I definitely don't want to be a writer. I've heard the headaches,
yeah.
You know, I've heard the horror story. I mean, I know many great comedians and whatnot, and people have been writers, but I've heard the horror stories too many times as of recently.
Yeah.
I would love to be a segment producer, because knowing how to have that energy, how you're supposed to deliver it, trying to pull that out of a personality. Honestly, I would love to be in AEW as a manager if I couldn't be in the ring. Like, I would love to manage Private Party. So
yeah,
it's just different
things, right.
You know, it's just different things I'd love to be a part of. And it's just, it's very, the business is just like the regular entertainment industry. It is very, very political and no. Very much who you know and who knows you and who's gonna vouch for you and who's not gonna backstab you and stuff like that.
My one of my favorite stories about WWE writers was for those that don't know, but I know Jay knows and I know because we're stand-ups, I haven't done stand-up in a while, but used to be, Patrice O'Neill wrote for them for like mm-hmm. a week. I know you know this story, but it's my favorite, and this kind of gives you an idea of the WWE's mindset on the world. Patrice got hired because they're like, oh my God, he's a huge stand-up comedian and a huge wrestling fan, and I'm sure he has a ton of great ideas. And so Patrice came in the first week, and Patrice thought he was coming in like one day a week to give like advice or like, oh, I can write from home or I can send this in. And Stephanie McMahon was like, hey, where are you going? And Patrice is like, well, I got my show tonight. I got dates to do. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, they thought Patrice was going to quit stand-up to come write for them.
Yeah, like, yeah, you crazy as hell. And
Patrice is like, I went through the whole hiring process, everything. I don't know where this got tangled up. Like, I ain't leaving stand-up.
Right, like, anybody finna fuck you? No, like, stand-up is
worse. That's what the WWE wants. They want 14 hours a day. The writers go through it, man. I have a very good friend who is very famous. He's a very famous showrunner. I can't say who it is because he doesn't want it known, but on his bucket list was to work for the WWE, just to do it. He's a huge wrestling fan. He wanted to do it. So the WWE gets this huge showrunner to come work for them. And after 3 months, he's like, yeah, I'm good. That was that. I mean, it was like, he's like, I had that moment. That's all I wanted. And it's hard, man. It's a really hard job.
Very, very difficult. It's not one of those jobs. It's not like any other TV writing job ever.
Mm-mm. Because they don't even write like TV writers. The script's different there. This is what blows my mind. You hire all these Emmy-winning writers, and then why don't you write your scripts like you write Sons of Anarchy? Instead, I read these scripts. I'm like, what are these bullet points? What is this? Who writes like this? This isn't professional writing. I mean, doesn't that blow your mind a little? You've seen the scripts. You're like,
sometimes I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. Like, this is fucking terrible.
Right. Like, if you decided you wanted to write your shows like Hollywood shows, why aren't you writing them in Hollywood format? Like, I don't understand. I've never gotten that.
Well, because Vince McMahon thinks he knows all, so.
I think Vince doesn't like reading scripts is what it is.
Sounds like it.
I think you've met people like that. And this is, by the way, and Jay can tell you this is totally true, too. This is why bad things get made in Hollywood, because there's a lot of people that make things in Hollywood that never read the script. Or they read one draft of the script. And they're like, this idea is great. Just keep rewriting it. And as soon as you tell them it's ready, they're like, yep, totally.
Let's go to production.
Mm-hmm. And it's a piece of trash because there was no quality control, no QC along the line. When I finished like the WWE script, and I need to send Jay a new copy of it because I rewrote it. Five drafts, man. There may be seven, there may be eight, there may be nine. That's the way it is. That's the way it should be if you're doing quality control. But I mean, I'm sending it to Jay so Jay can read it and you know, fuck it up if he needs to. or tell me it's good. Or tell me it's good. Because we have major interested suitors in it, and I want to get this made, but I want to get made right. Part of the problem with Landline is I like Landline. It's not my favorite movie of mine because I needed a little more money, and I didn't have it. And it wasn't to pay me. I didn't get paid for that movie. I got $0 for that movie. I needed a little more money to do the sound better that I wanted, and I needed a little more time that I wasn't given because I thought the script was good, but it needed to get better. And that hurt us, man. That hurt us. And but, you know, it ended up doing fine. I'm happy that we got distributed. I'm happy it got on all the platforms it got on. I just think we could have done a little better, and we're gonna. I've told Jay a million times we're gonna keep making stuff, and they're gonna get better.
That's what I love to hear, bro. That's what I love to hear.
Well, I'm glad you took out time with me here. For those that don't know, Jamie Kennedy was supposed to join us, and I haven't even heard from Jamie. So hopefully he's alive. Though it's possible he got high and passed out. I was, you know what, man, I couldn't ask for anything better. I'm glad I got to sit here and
do this. This has been a blast. This has been a blast for sure. Well,
let's keep doing more, man. I told you, I am open to ideas. Fill my schedule. Let's keep writing. Let's keep podcasting. I don't give a shit what it is. Let's keep it going, and let's bring more people on the Express, man.
I'm here for it, bro. I'm here. I'm telling you, I'm dead ass here for it.
All right, man. Well, I'm going to send you the script. You give it a read. I'm going to get this ready to post tomorrow. And, dude, just keep let's keep talking. And you know, let's make the world a little bit better of a place, a lot better of a place. You know, I'm excited to see you, man. And thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Anything you got to promote, by the way? What do you want to plug?
That's cool. Just follow me. People can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. J Washington, MRJAY Washington. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/JAY Washington 80. The Mad Titan podcast, Matt mentioned earlier. I get you caught up on everything happening in the Marvel and DC live action and cinematic universes. It is barbershop talk for nerds.
So yeah, but it's the only stop you need to make, by the way.
Only stop. Like, one stop shopping, baby.
All the news. You will get all the news at Mad Titan.
Damn right. All at one stop shop. And also, the show that I do live with Winston A. Marshall every Tuesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. on the East Coast, Blurreds in the Hood. We cover pop culture news, nerd stuff, sports, and so much more. And it's a bunch of laughs all for an hour. So it's on youtube.com/blurredsinthehood. That's BLERDS, the letter N, THEHOOD.
I love it. You are the best, Jay. Thanks for taking time out to do this. And by the way, you can watch Landline on Tubi, Amazon Prime. You can order it on Comcast and other on-demand providers. And then you can watch Jay tear it up in that movie too.
It's a fun Jay time. Very best, fun time. Man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. And let's talk soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk soon, buddy.